name is Tyler, and I'm one of the pastors here, and we are midway through the summer, right? We've been meeting for about 8 weeks now. We have about 8 weeks to go before we launch publicly near the end of September, and so we've just been meeting every single week this summer before we even open up our doors to talk about our DNA, to talk about our core values, and we're spending a significant amount of time talking about mission, what it looks like to be on mission. Because honestly, when it comes to being missional, it's really, really easy to get sidetracked and to get it wrong. James Davison Hunter, a sociologist, wrote a really good book on just Christian cultural engagement. The book is called To Change a World. And in that book, he unpacks a few major ways that Christians have historically tried to change culture, but been very unsuccessful. And so one of those approaches that he mentions in his book is called the defensive against approach. This is a view that America has been taken over by secularists, causing harm to America, causing harm to the church. And the mantra of this group continues to be, let's take back our country for Christ. Let's take back our nation for Christ. Let's get it back to the way it was when it was a Christian nation. And that's sort of the mantra of this group. I call this, or nickname this approach, the arm wrestling group, because it's more of an outside-in approach rather than an inside-out approach. It's trying to arm wrestle the culture, get people into power, get people into political office so that we can arm wrestle the culture and have the world that we want, and sort of force non-Christians to behave in the way that we want them to. Okay, but that's not working. That sort of combative approach is not working. The second approach is the purity from approach. The purity approach believes that there is very little that can be done with the world. They look out on the streets of Benson and Omaha or the world around us and just say, man, most of this is irredeemable. Like, the earth is going to hell in a handbasket. There's not much we can do. So we should just sit, have church, and just preserve our faith. So the end goal for this approach is preservation rather than transformation of the world around. And they've been unsuccessful as well. So I think that these two approaches of engagement that Hunter points out are really spot on. I've been able to see them a lot in our culture. And what I want us to do this morning is to really look at those two approaches, isolation, trying to stay pure, trying to preserve ourselves, and having a sort of a combative mentality towards culture, trying to force change on the culture and try to get people to behave like we want them to behave, to reject those forms of engagement and adopt a biblical view of engagement moving forward. That as we launch on September 20th, or around that time, it's our tentative date, that by that time that we would be a church that has been formed by God into a people who are living as cultural insiders in Benson. People who are trying to change the culture from within, from the inside out. And to see how that plays out, I want to look at the story of Daniel this morning, to look at his life, and to see how he was a cultural insider and used by God to transform from within. And so if you could open your Bibles with me or turn to the Bible app on your phone, you can also download City Light Benson's app. If you go to your app store, type in City Light Benson, you'll be able to download the app, and there's a Bible icon in there as well. If you do that, we're going to be able to go through the first half of Daniel's life at 10,000 feet and draw some principles from his life to figure out how we are to be cultural insiders in this context, in this day and age. All right, so to give you some context before we dive in, Daniel was the man who famously escaped death after being put into the lion's den. All right, and we're actually not going to get to that part of the story today where he was thrown into the lion's den. But if you really want to experience it and get to know that story, I would highly recommend watching VeggieTales. It's just a clear, vivid, accurate description of what went down. So my son Zane loves that story. But seriously here, the events of Daniel take place about a half a century before Jesus was born. Right? So before Jesus comes on the scene, about a half a century before he shows up, that was the time that Daniel was living in. And it was a very, very dark time for God's people. It preceded the 400 years of silence before Jesus came, where there was no scripture written during a period of 400 years. So right before that 400 years, God's people were thriving, God had caused them to flourish. But then, as always, we see in Scripture that God's people eventually drifted. They started drifting away from God. And God was gracious to them. Even though they were in moral apostasy, they were drifting, worshiping idols, right? God was gracious to them. He caused prophets to rise up like Isaiah to preach to them, to warn them, to say, hey, if you continue to go down this path, I'm going to have to discipline you. I'm going to have to bring discipline. And so Isaiah was risen up. Jeremiah was risen up. This wasn't like a hasty decision by God to come and discipline them. He was patient with them over the course of many years, many prophets, and they still were hard-hearted and didn't listen to God. So then God finally cleared the path for the nation and empire of Babylon to come in and to destroy and to take God's people captive. And so they became slaves of the Babylonian Empire. And King Nebuchadnezzar went out and found the brightest men, the most gifted men, and brought them into the court to be able to use them for his purposes. And so Daniel was one of those men that was handpicked by King Nebuchadnezzar and his crew to come in to use Daniel's gifts for the advancement of the Babylonian Empire. All right? And so Daniel got dragged against his will. Daniel was grieving the loss of his nation and was forced to work for this narcissistic, pagan, prideful king. And then one day, King Nebuchadnezzar started having these nightmares. He started having these dreams that he didn't know what to do with. And guess who was right there? Daniel. And so let's start in chapter 2, verses 1. It says, in the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. So he started to get really, really angry. He was losing sleep. He didn't know what was going on. He was furious. He wanted to figure out why these nightmares were happening. And by the way, Lady Gaga also had nightmares like this, recurring nightmares. So if you want to find out more about that, I wrote an article on Gaga and the gospel, so come talk to me afterwards. The K-State students have already heard that, so just a side note, sidebar. So he had these reoccurring nightmares, didn't know what to do with them, right? And so he demanded that his magicians tell him what these dreams meant or else he would kill them. He was that angry. And so in verse 10, we read this. These magicians came back to him and said, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there's not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. For no great and powerful king has ever asked such a thing of any magician, or enchanter, or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with flesh. So it's interesting, they're saying, hey, you can't ask this of us. This is way too hard. No one can tell you except the gods about what your dream meant. Right? So they're saying this has to be a supernatural revelation. We can't do this. And so look what happens in the story. Skip to verse 19. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. And so just like the magician said, the Chaldean said, it did take a supernatural power to interpret the dreams. And so God himself revealed Nebuchadnezzar's dream to Daniel in the middle of the night. And skip down to verse 26 to see what happened. The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? And Daniel answered the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked, but there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. So I just love that he shows up and says, there is a God in heaven. He's the true God, and he is the one who has revealed this for your benefit. Just know that. And skip down to verse 46 to see what happens after Daniel then proceeds to tell King Nebuchadnezzar the dream. This is how King Nebuchadnezzar responds. Verse 46, then King Nebuchadnezzar fell upon his face and paid homage to Daniel and commanded that an offering and incense be offered up to him. The king answered and said to Daniel, truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings and the revealer of mysteries. For you have been able to reveal this mystery. Isn't that amazing? I'm just going to shut this off here. Now you know what's going on with the audio. Okay, good. So this is an amazing, amazing story. So this guy goes against his will, has to work for this narcissistic king. The Spirit of God troubles the heart of the king. Daniel's an insider right there next to the king. God supernaturally drops on Daniel. Daniel goes to the king and says, this is what's up. This is your dream. And it results in King Nebuchadnezzar worshiping, coming down to pay homage to Daniel and saying, truly, your God is God of gods and Lord of kings. It's an amazing, amazing story. And so now I just want to take a few minutes to unpack what I think are three principles that we see in this story, this flyover version, to understand how we can live as a cultural insider like Daniel and receive supernatural power to be able to have influence in lives of non-Christians. All right? And so here's the first principle of being a cultural insider. It's to pursue integration over isolation. Pursue integration over isolation. So cultural insiders are those who integrate and get inside the culture. They seek to change the culture from the inside out. And we see this in the life of Daniel. I know some of you guys may be thinking, well, Daniel's story is a lot different than ours. Right? He was a cultural insider involuntarily, right? He was forced against his will to be an insider. Whereas for us, it's voluntary. Like no one made us a slave. We can go and integrate if we want to. But in Daniel's story, we see the benefits of being integrated. And that's what I want us to focus in on. What happens when you're present and next to people, physically close to them? Because Daniel was immersed in Babylonian culture and worked in the king's court and was integrated into the White House, so to speak, of Babylonian culture, he had special privileges that other people that belonged to God didn't have with the government at the time or with King Nebuchadnezzar. And so when you're a cultural insider, you have privileges that other people don't have. My friend Michael Brown, who's also a campus minister with CREW and an adjunct professor at a public university, so he's part-time staff, part-time professor. He's really an insider in this university. They paid for his PhD and everything, and he's gained a lot of influence there. And he said to me that when you become an insider, you have free access to information that other people don't have. You have favor with people that you would not normally have, and you're able to build trust that other people don't have, which gives you then, in turn, the ability to influence people and speak truth into their lives and have a say in their lives. That's some of the benefits of being an insider. And we see God giving Daniel that in the story. Even in verse 9, we read, and God gave Daniel favor and God gave Daniel compassion with the people that worked in Nebuchadnezzar's court. So he was a man that worked and was faithful and then received favor and received trust so that when the time came, he was right next to Nebuchadnezzar's side and was able to interpret the dreams for him. And so we see that him having just special privileges, right? And it benefited God and the kingdom. And so I just want to call us as a church to model this type of integration into culture, right? To gain people's favor, to gain people's trust so that we might have a say in people's lives here. And I just want to stop and say that I want to celebrate the ways that you guys have already sought to integrate yourself into Benson over the last 8 weeks. I've been so encouraged by you guys. And so I want to highlight a few of the people in our church that I celebrated so you guys can know what's happening. Even before we got this building, just as we were hosting informational meetings, Steve and Gene Civich decided to sell their home in West Omaha and to come down and live right off of Country Club Ave over here. And it's been so hard for them. Their building has had so many issues and problems, right? And it's probably caused them to doubt them moving down here and integrating themselves into the community here. I mean, they've seen animals in their basement that you do not, that you should not see, that are not pets, trust me, right? They've gone through a lot of hardship. There's been a cost to actually integrating here. But I want to celebrate that. I want to celebrate Lindsay Etzelmiller moving to the neighborhood with her roommates recently. And she just talked to the principal over here a month ago, just saying, hey, I want to get a job here. I want to not just move here, but I want to start teaching here as soon as possible. Terry Gulick, a couple of weeks ago, jumped in to volunteer for the Benson Garden Walk. Just a really, really small step to integrate in, meet people in the neighborhood, serve people in the neighborhood. And so I really want to celebrate her being the solo person to, from our church to jump in and be a part of that community-wide event. Jesse Rios on our core team has played many concerts at the Waiting Room in downtown here in Benson. And his wife, Nikki, is now pursuing a job at Aromas because she's told me passionately last week that she wants to get in here. She wants to meet people. She wants to serve people in Aromas and network through having a job here. So I want to celebrate that. Matt Van Epps on our core team has recently been doing stand-up comedy here in Benson at the Barley Street Tavern. So I loved how he has sort of taken his hobby that he's passionate about and using it to build relationships and rub shoulders with other comedians here in the area. Though Hy-Vee is not in Benson proper, I still want to celebrate Jack and Amanda. Jack's a manager at Hy-Vee. Brett and Chelsea are the sidekicks. They're engaged. They're working at Hy-Vee. And God has used them as insiders, right? And so we don't want to be legalistic as a community to say, hey, if you don't have a job or belong to a club within this mile radius, you're not being missional. We'll never be a church that says that, right? We want to focus our efforts and energy on Benson, but we don't want to be legalistic. We realize that God's going to call all of us to be insiders all over the city. And so I just want to celebrate Jack and Brett and Chelsea, who have been having tons of gospel conversations. They've been faithful workers who have kind of risen up the ladder at Hy-Vee, taking new positions because they're faithful workers, and they've been able to use their manager and assistant manager positions to have influence on the people that are there. And so I just want to say, hey, it's already started. The Spirit's working in your hearts. And I pray that this would be the week, that would be a turning point for our church, where we would ask God to take steps of faith, to integrate, to take steps of faith in trying out things here, to get more immersed and integrated, so that we would have people's favor, we would have people's trust, and be able to speak in and be used by God in people's lives, like Daniel. James Davison Hunter, who I mentioned before, explains that the main reason why Christian believers today have not had the influence in the culture to which they've aspired is not that they don't believe enough, not that they don't try hard enough, not that they don't care enough, or think Christianly enough, or have the right worldview, but, he says, rather, they haven't had an influence because they've been absent. They just haven't been around. So it's not that they're not reading their Bibles hard enough, not that they're thinking Christianly enough, not that they have the right worldview. The reason why Christians historically have not had an influence in certain aspects of culture is because we've been simply absent from it. And so today's a call to not be isolated, not be absent from where culture is happening here in the city, but to integrate and to work towards getting in to those places and being close in proximity with those people so that we would have influence. James Davison Hunter points out that most of the headquarters of most of the mega Christian organizations in our country actually don't reside in the cities of most influence in our country. If you look at a lot of the mega organizations that are Christian, they're not located in New York City, they're not located in Washington, D.C., they're not located in Chicago or Los Angeles. Rather, they reside in cities that are not at the center, but rather on the periphery of culture. And so he's just saying, hey, if we want to make a difference, we're going to have to move to the places. We're going to have to go to the places where culture is made. And that's what Pastor Tim Keller in New York City, one of my favorite pastors, is urging the members of his congregation in New York to do. He said that, hey, we're going to have to be a church that goes uphill and a church that goes upstream to where culture is flowing down from if we're going to make a difference here in New York City. He says, trends in culture flow downward from the most influential elite cultural institutions, such as Ivy League institutions, Hollywood, dominant media conglomerates. And therefore, he says, it is important for Christians to have a presence in top-level institutions or venues, to write plays and produce films, to contribute to the op-ed pages of the New York Times, to lead the administrations of the Ivy League schools, or manage elite publications and research organizations. So he's just reminding his church, hey, New York City, this is how we need to go upstream, is to get into these areas. If we're going to make a difference, we're going to have to move upstream and not settle for being downstream, where culture, where we're on the periphery, and no one's going to listen to us. And so we need to contextualize that and adapt that here in Benson, to think, hey, what are the places that culture is flowing downward from here in Omaha and here in Benson? Where are decisions being made? And to work to integrate ourselves into those places so that we can actually speak into, trust in God to speak into those areas. And so the first principle of becoming a cultural insider is to pursue integration over isolation. The second principle is to pursue investment over immediacy. So investment over immediacy. Building a long-term investment mentality rather than going in and desiring quick results. Right? So in verse 5 in Daniel, we read, they were to be educated for 3 years, and at the end of that time, they were to stand before the king. So I just want to point out that Daniel had to go through a 3-year process of going through boring classes, studying Babylonian civilization, the same civilization that wiped out his people, right? He had to take those boring grammar classes, and all the while he's probably thinking, God, what in the world are you doing? He probably had a crisis of faith during those 3 years, and many of you guys can probably relate to that. Being in a position where everything's kind of boring, monotonous, and you're like, God, what in the world is going on? Like, how are you going to use this? How are you going to use me? Like, where are you in all of this? And those were the questions that Daniel was asking. And I'm sure some of you have resonate with that. But we see in hindsight, as we read Daniel, that God took him on a 3-year journey to put the Babylonian jersey on him, to integrate him into the life and culture there, so that he would look like and think like a Babylonian to be able to influence the king, to make a long-term difference, right? In the book of Esther, we see the exact same thing happening, God taking Esther and integrating her into the pagan culture of the time to be used long-term for God's people, the benefit of God's people. Esther, listen, she didn't have to go through 3 years of boring classes, but she had to go through 12 months of beauty treatments, right? Now, some of you ladies are probably thinking, sign me up for that, God. I want that missional strategy. Give me that Groupon for 12 months of spa treatments, you know, so that I can influence somebody. Like, that sounds really good. But Esther wasn't that type of girl, right? Esther was like the hardworking farm girl. And so being in 12 months of beauty treatments was kind of like being on a never-ending episode of The Bachelor, right? With all the cat fights and the weird ladies. Like, that's what her experience was. But at the end of the 12 months, God used her to literally save the entire nation. Like, there was a plot to wipe out all of the Jews, much like in the time of Hitler, to wipe off all of the Jews off the face of the planet. And God used Esther, beauty treatments and everything, to be able to stand in front of the king to plead with him to save her people. And so God used her as an insider, having the trust and in favor of the king to save God's people. And so that's another great example. And so really here's the payoff of being a patient insider, is that eventually, if you're an insider, if you're integrated, if you're rubbing shoulders with people that aren't like you, right, eventually the Holy Spirit is going to drop on, like on King Nebuchadnezzar, and he's going to produce a troubled spirit within them. There's going to be that divorce. There's going to be that hardship with a parent, a spouse, or something's going to happen in their life that causes a crisis. And the question we have to ask ourselves, are we going to be next to them when that happens? When the Spirit drops on their life and causes a holy discontentment with life and reveal a need for God, the question is, are we going to be there next to them? Are we going to be in a holy huddle, isolated somewhere? And there's a great reward that comes with being there, right? And so that's why blitzing the neighborhood here with tracks isn't nearly going to be as effective as being by someone's side when the Spirit comes and gives somebody a troubled heart or gives a group of people a crisis here that we can speak into. So it's just a call to be physically present and next to somebody, rubbing shoulders with them. Now, I have to confess that my heart, that this is shepherding me, that this text is really working on my heart because I'm nowhere near this vision. I have a desire for quick results. Achiever is one of my top five strength finders, strengths. And so I love quick results. I love to get in, get something done, and see results, right? And I'm not a person who's by nature patient, who has a long-term investment strategy. I recently went to our neighborhood association for the place, the neighborhood that I live, and they literally talked for shrubs for an entire hour. Like, do we want to put them over here, or do we put the shrubs over here? And I was like, oh, like I cannot stand this. I need to get the heck out of here. And that's just my heart by nature, is if I see that something's not going to be worth it or I feel like it's going to be a waste of time, I just bail. So I need God to change my heart. I need God to give me a different vision for how to reach people in Benson and in the city. I need God to give me a vision like Daniel had, who's going through boring classes, who thought it was a waste of time, to just sit and be present for a while somewhere so that I can have a long-term investment mentality and be able to influence others. And so I'm praying that God would change my heart in the midst of all this as I'm talking up here. So the third and final principle of becoming a cultural insider is to pursue faithfulness over accommodation. Pursuing faithfulness to God and obedience to God over simply accommodating to the culture's anti-Christian views and practices. And because most of us spend the majority of our week at school, or probably in here most of us are young adults, young professionals, we have an occupation that we spend a lot of time at during the week. 40 to 60 hours probably most of us spend at work. And so we need to be a people in a church that learns how to be faithful to God and integrate our faith into the workplace, into our vocations, if we're going to see long-term fruit in the city. James Davison Hunter says, "The call to go into all the world has long been interpreted geographically, the call of missionaries to sort of go to faraway places. But," and this is a great point, he says, "the Great Commission can also be interpreted in terms of social structure. The church is to go into all realms of social life, in volunteer and paid labor, skilled and unskilled labor, the crafts, engineering, commerce, art, law, architecture, teaching, healthcare, and service." So I love that he's just pointing out that, hey, we're not just to show up and sort of be around a geographical area, but every geographical area, every city has cultures of institutions, right? Cultural institutions, right? Cracks and crevices in the culture, law, teaching, right? The education realm. There's all kinds of cracks and crevices in culture. And he's saying if we're going to be a church that changes culture and engages culture, we can't just show up in a place. We have to actually integrate ourselves into all those cultural institutions, which means that we need to take our jobs really seriously. See that they're a vocation, and it's a calling on your life by God to bring your faith into that arena of culture. Daniel was a guy who was called by God into the Babylonian government. He had a government job. And so God called him to integrate his faith and to be faithful and obedient to God within that occupation. And like many of us, many of you in the room, he ran into a bind early on in his occupation. He had a crisis of faith. In Daniel chapter 1, before Nebuchadnezzar started having those reoccurring nightmares, Daniel had his crisis of faith. The text says that he and his friends were required to eat meat, right? And this wasn't just any meat. This wasn't just any wine, but this was meat that was sacrificed to idols, and it was meat that was forbidden by God's Mosaic law that they had at the time. So Daniel had a crisis of faith, a question that he had to answer at work. And that was, am I going to accommodate to the culture and just go with the flow and expect God to be okay with it? Or because this is a worship issue, am I going to actually resist even though there might be a cost? Even though I might lose my job, even though I might lose man's approval, the king's approval, am I going to be faithful? And I love what the text says in verse 8. It says, but Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. So I love that. I love that he made a resolution in his heart not to give in to the cultural sins, not to give in to worshiping the king, but to seek the praise of God over the praise of man. That's the kind of man that Daniel was. And we're going to be faced with those same temptations that he was, that as we get closer and closer into culture, into the epicenters of culture, right, as we go further and further up the ladder in our workplace, the temptation is going to be to compromise, to accommodate, rather than being faithful to God. But I want to point out in the story that there's a reward for faithfulness. That if you, in fact, risk your job at some points, you risk losing people's approval to be faithful to God, there comes a reward with that. In the story, we see that Daniel passed this moral test, that he risked his life to reject the food being offered to him. And then we read in verse 17 that God gave Daniel increased learning, that God gave Daniel increased skills to work with. And it says that God gave him the ability to interpret visions and dreams. So right after he passed this big moral test at work, God supernaturally blessed him, enabled him to actually have a gift to interpret dreams, which was the thing that caused Nebuchadnezzar to turn around and to get on his knees and give homage and worship to the true God. And so I just want to point that out today, that as you guys are faithful, right? And isn't Daniel a good model for us? Like as we move into a post-Christian nation, as we move into a pluralistic society more and more, we're not going to be slaves anytime soon, but that's where our culture is headed. And as we read the story of Daniel, we read that it is possible to be a Christian and to be faithful to God and to see God work supernaturally through us to impact and influence other people's lives. So it's an encouraging story. And so that's my vision for us, is that we would be people who are integrating our faith into our work, that we're being faithful to God. Meanwhile, we're gaining favor and trust of the people that we work with, so that when the crisis comes, that we would be able to speak into their life. All right? So those are the three principles of being a cultural insider. Integration over isolation, investment over immediacy, and faithfulness over accommodation. And so as I close today, I want to do this. I want to point us to the greater Daniel, right? The greater Daniel. There was a man who decided that in order to make a difference and influence and save the world, he couldn't remain isolated in heaven. He had to actually come and take on flesh through the incarnation and become a cultural insider here. He was a man who integrated himself in the Jewish culture for 30 years before he said anything. He lived a Jewish life for 30 years before he started his short 3-year ministry. So he gained the trust and he grew in stature and favor over the course of those 30 years before he was able to say anything. And he was a man who wanted to get to the center of culture, where culture was flowing downstream. It said he wanted to get to Jerusalem. The Gospels say he set his face towards Jerusalem. He was saying all the time, I got to get to Jerusalem. And when he finally got to the center of culture there, to the headquarters of Jewish life, he was not praised. He was not celebrated. But rather, becoming a cultural insider cost him a lot. In fact, it cost him his whole life. So he wasn't celebrated, but he rather was mocked, beaten, and hung on a cross. And so Daniel is a good model for us to see this morning, but I want to show that Jesus is even greater, that Daniel risked his life to be faithful to God, but in the end was saved out of the lion's den. Jesus asked God to save him, for the cup to pass in the garden. And yet God did not rescue Jesus off the cross, but rather turned his face so that God's plan of redemption might come to fruition, so that God's plan might come fully and be consummated, that we might be saved as the people of God, that we might be adopted into his family. And so I want to call us today to look to Jesus, to see him being a cultural insider who pursued us from heaven, to bring us back to the Father, and it came at the cost of his life. And so therefore, I want to ask the question, what are we willing to give up? What are we willing to risk? What's the cost going to be for our life to see Jesus pursuing us so that we might be integrated and go into the culture here in Benson and Omaha and risk a far lesser things in order to see people come to Christ and come to know him? And so that's the question I want to leave us today with is, where are you going to go? In light of Jesus coming towards you, now where can you go to rub shoulders with somebody else? How might you be integrated into the culture here? So that come September 20th, that we are a church that has the DNA of, man, we are in this. We are planted here. We are grounded here. We want to do life with the people here. And so as we take communion here in a few minutes, I just want to ask you guys to pause and to pray to God and say, God, where would you send me? Where do you want me to go? And even if it doesn't give you a clear answer today, just to have an open-handed posture to the Lord and say, God, I'm going to be open to you. Over the next month, over the next 2 months, Lord, lead me, guide me, and I will follow you into the places that you're calling me to go here in Benson. Let's become a church that moves toward that. Let's pray.